This is a talk on finding the way out, and it turns out that the way out is in. It seems that any number of times we've explored the first and second noble truths in which the Buddha spoke about the universality and the causes of suffering. The first noble truth, however, is often reworded from suffering to nagging dissatisfaction, in order to reflect more accurately the reality of our lived experience. But whichever term you prefer, the teaching is that this situation is universal. We truly are all in the same boat. Our mind's deep conditioning leads us to feel that there is always something left that needs completing or fixing. In the case of the second noble truth, the traditional translation states that the causes of suffering are attachment and aversion, our clinging to the pleasant and attempting to ward off or distance the unpleasant. Again, I rephrase this truth to bring it closer to our lived experience using the lament, "If only, fill in the blank, then I could be happy." Each of us can provide the missing words according to our own view of the obstacles to our happiness. As I see it, there are at least two problems here. One is that while we all want to be happy, our efforts don't bring lasting happiness. What we find again and again is that avoidance and clinging are not the source of happiness. Rather, they mire us more deeply in dissatisfaction. This is one of the most basic and most useful insights we experience as a result of the regular meditation practice. Another problem is that our attempts to rearrange and tweak our life circumstances require an enormous amount of output of energy and time. In effect, we set about wasting this precious lifetime, waiting and hoping that the results we want are just around the corner, sure that this next tweak will do it, that this time happiness will have arrived by the time we turn the next page on the calendar. Well, we turn the page and another dissatisfaction appears. I call this the bad news. This week, we take a closer look at what I call the Buddha's gospel, the good news. The third noble truth states categorically that there is a way out of our dilemma. To begin putting this into perspective, I want to read from Karen Armstrong's book, Buddha. We hear the story of the first glimpse that the young Siddhartha Gautama had of what might lie ahead. His father had taken him to watch the ceremonial plowing of the fields before the planting of the next year's crop. All the men of the villages and townships took part in this annual event, so his father had left the small son in the care of his nurses under the shade of a rose apple tree while he went to work. But the nurses decided to go and watch the plowing, and finding himself alone, Gautama sat up. In one version of this story, we are told that when he looked at the field that was being plowed, he noticed that the young grass had been torn up and that insects and the eggs they had laid in these new shoots had been destroyed. The little boy gazed at the carnage and felt a strange sorrow, as though it were his own relatives that had been killed. But it was a beautiful day, and a feeling of pure joy rose up unbidden in his heart. We have all experienced such moments which come upon us unexpectedly and without any striving on our part. Indeed, as soon as we start to reflect upon our happiness, asking why we are so joyful and becoming self-conscious, the experience fades. As Gautama reflected later, it existed apart from the objects that awaken. The child had been taken out of himself by a moment of spontaneous compassion when he had allowed the pain of creatures that had nothing to do with him personally to pierce him to the heart. This surge of selfless empathy had brought him a moment of spiritual release. It's a very moving story on many levels. Perhaps the most important thing for us to hear is that the experience of insight is a natural occurrence. Many or all of us in this room have had similar experiences in our lifetimes. These fleeting moments of wakefulness where we glimpse something indescribable, lovely, and whole. Then, once again, we become lost in the illusion of the world. We return to filling the gas tank and going to the movies and wondering whether anything actually happened at all or whether it was just wishful thinking. The question arises, though, if insight is a natural phenomenon, why doesn't it happen more often? Why so rare? Well, as it turns out, insight and awakening do require something from us. Because of our deep conditioning and attachments to our illusions, a more durable awakening depends on our repeatedly setting an intention in that direction, which in turn requires that much of life as we know it take a back seat. We will need to prioritize our practice and assure that we are living according to our highest values. It requires as well the humility to see ourselves and a burning desire to be free. As Joseph Goldstein says, if you want to be struck by lightning, you have to go stand in the field. My own experience is that in those moments when I truly want to awaken, when I finally let go of who I thought I was and how I thought it was, all the powers and forces of the universe align to support and enable. And when I resist or lose focus, neglect and ignore what I know, indulge in unskillful words and actions, this alignment of supportive forces seems to fade or become inaccessible, and under I go again. The Bengali Indian teacher Punja was once asked, "Why are not more people enlightened?" To which he replied, "Because not all want to awaken." Perhaps you and I don't really want to let go of the world as we know it. We so often want instead just the fringe benefits of the practice, some relaxation and relief from the stress of living. "Well, I want to awaken," you say. Suzuki Roshi asks in return, "Why do you want enlightenment? You may not like it." In the well-known tradition of Buddhist lists, the Fourth Noble Truth sets out the way to freedom in the Eightfold Noble Path. What a blessing when we are in such need of direction. Here we have it. So let's revisit for a moment the Buddha's direct teaching about the path to awakening. The Noble Eightfold Path, the path made up of the following eight factors divided into three larger groups. The first group is the wisdom group, and it includes the first two, wise view and wise intention. The second group has three factors, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. And the third group, concentration, includes wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. We say that the path is the most important element in the Buddha's teaching because the path is what makes the Dhamma available to us as a living experience. Without the path, the Dhamma would be just a shell, a collection of doctrines without inner life. Without the path, full deliverance from suffering would become a mere dream. It's easy to get distracted or discouraged in this journey, especially early on, as the fruits of the meditation practice are not yet strong. Here we do so need encouragement and love from one another in the Sangha, Beyond continuing my own work on this journey, it is my intention to use all available life energy, assisting in every way possible others to unlock the door of the prison of your thoughts. It may also be useful to consider that we really don't know how many lifetimes we have already been working to awaken. Seen through one frame, you may have more merit accumulated than you realize. However, regardless of karmic situation, meditation practiced diligently helps us to sustain and deepen what has gone before. Some wisdom from Sylvia Borstein, what she calls the third and a half noble truth. The Buddha taught that the end of suffering was possible. However, the end of suffering hasn't happened for me yet. It's not from lack of right aspiration, I aspire, nor is it from not understanding. I believe with all my heart that freedom is possible. I know the tendency to struggle in the mind comes from taking one's own story personally rather than from seeing it as part of the great unfolding cosmic drama. I know for sure that everything is conditioned, and I more or less believe in karma. Nevertheless, I struggle and I suffer. I suffer less than I used to, though, and I'm not as distraught about the suffering as I used to be. So I have added an extra half noble truth. The half extra truth is, suffering is manageable. Short of coming to the very end of suffering, which I absolutely have faith in as a possibility, I am content with managing my suffering better. Since I know suffering is manageable, I'm not as frightened of pain as I used to be. These days, I often tell new students right away that although the Buddha taught the end of suffering was possible, I myself am not there yet. They are not dismayed, nor do I seem to lose any credibility. It's great news for them to hear that suffering is manageable. That extra half of a noble truth keeps me more compassionate toward myself and toward others. I can see how I get trapped in my stories, how I struggle, how I suffer, how I wish I didn't, and how ultimately things change and resolve. I am kinder to myself when I see how much pain I storm up in my mind through its own conditioned clingings. Acknowledging my own suffering, in spite of the years of practice and whatever wisdom or understanding I might have, makes me sensitive to what must be the enormous pain of all the people with whom I'm sharing this planet. And we'll close with a reminder from Rumi. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep.